Cosmic Continuum, by Ernest L. Norman. Published by Unirius, Science of Life. Note, the text for this book was given in 1959. Preface. In the histories of the world, it is invariably acknowledged that all good, all great achievements and advanced forms of culture were given in posterity to mankind by certain individuals who were equally advanced in their particular idiom. Many of these great souls have died for this cause of moral, mental and physical freedom, others have remained anonymous through the passage of time until the day of vindication when mankind acknowledged their creativeness by common usage. In line with this preface, we present this book, Cosmic Continuum, a most amazing and remarkable book, also dedicated to the future generations of mankind who will, in their posterity, find common usage for all principles and concepts contained in its pages. Indeed, it will be so mandated that if mankind is to survive in a progressive continuity upon the face of this planet, he will, by the necessity for survival, be forced to use and adapt in common usage these principles and concepts just as have other races of peoples on other planets in far-off solar systems. Equally remarkable or even more amazing, is the manner in which this book was brought into existence and one which bespeaks the highly developed and trained aptitude of the human mind which can use as its source, the vast wealth of information contained in the higher mental superconscious. The manner of creating this book was achieved by the author in his usual method, by dictation, using a tape recorder. This entire book was dictated in one continuous session, save for a few briefer pauses, and total elapsed recording time was 9 hours, completely filling both tracks of 2 standard 7-inch reels of tape, and was transcribed and printed verbatim, requiring no sentence structure changes. There was no preparation for this dictation. In fact, not even a premonition. The author simply sat down and began to dictate. When you have finished reading this book, you will agree that it is indeed a prodigious mental feat and one which is without equal. For in this consideration, we must remember that the concepts given are far in advance of our present-day scientific technocracy, scientific concepts which have just begun to be vaguely explored by a few of the more far-reaching minds. Cosmic Continuum will therefore, in the future, become one of the classics of scientific literature, and along with other works posed by the same author, will also become the reference library used by the scientist of the future millennium. It might be well to note that this book carries the same transcending power often felt by those who read the works of Unirius, a power often causing drowsiness, lassitude or felt as heat, and should this occur to you, it is not the context of reading material but, through these words, you have become attuned to this great source of healing and adjusting power. Remember also that inasmuch as these principles and concepts are extremely advanced, they will bear much repeat reading, and the subsequent benefits gained from such rereading will be felt in many different ways. Your mental horizon will be broadened, you will find better adjustment in your material world, physical healing will be manifested, and peace of mind will take the place of the chaotic misunderstandings of yesterday. Part 1. Chapter 1. In common abstractions based on our nuclear science, all matter can be resolved into energy. Therefore, in the pure idiom, this energy is part of the sum and total of what is commonly referred to as spirit. In other words, interdimensional forms of energy, manner of transmissional factors of dynamics, and the appearance of energy as seemingly solid matter, are all part of these abstractions. Consequently, it can be universally resolved that as all is energy, and as energy is dynamic, all action must therefore first take place in these seemingly invisible dimensions. This is just as true with man and his course of life as it is with the atomic constituents which make up his body. Consciousness in daily life is therefore an integrated pattern of relationships with numerous past transmissions of life as well as past lifetimes. These relationships, moving as oscillating patterns harmonically attuned to consciousness, can be pictured as various formations of sine wave energies. These past life experience relationships represent, in scientific parlance, the negative polarity of life. as all polarities must be equated into two basic and diametrically opposed opposites, we must therefore have with this negative side of life, a positive pole which gives not only a basic equilibrium, but it is that which makes all common forms of energy transmission possible. A universally recognized concept of this positive polarity relates the individual to the various inspirational aggregates which he finds in his daily life. Such aggregates are the various religious systems, pantheologies, etc., which he has always automatically regarded as spiritual in nature. Obviously, as is posed by the negative polarity referred to as the subconsciousness and which composes by far the largest part of the ego, the individual must then have a positive polarity which can be represented as the spiritual ego. Jesus referred to the spiritual ego as the Father within. This ego, through frequency relationship, resolves itself into an infinite number of forms of consciousness which will, through the common interchange of polarity patterns, thus be joined in a common union of associations. This common joining does two things. It neutralizes caustic negative effects which always subsequently occur in future happenings to this individual, and it also polarizes the corresponding idiom of consciousness in the superego. The individual will then, in the concourse of thousands of lives, develop this spiritual ego into such proportions that it becomes the dominant polarity in his life. Such a person can thus be said to be overshadowed by a superhuman being, thus he will then reflect into his daily earth life such attributes as were expressed in the life of Jesus. For, in that individual, we can find a true example of this highly developed spiritual over-self reflecting through and influencing the physical life in various acts which the physical man has termed godlike. The average person then, who is seeking truth and an escape from the material world with its purgatory of karma, must always carry foremost in his mind the vision of the higher self. He must give it every opportunity to guide him in his daily life. He must also use it only with the most positive solutions and wiser attitudes toward various life experiences, for only in positive consciousness is the superego developed. Thus the superego becomes the master over the lower negative self, and it can then be said that this person has been saved by Christ, his own Christ self. Because of certain statements and concepts postulated in the previous text, the average reader may wish to challenge these statements. He may feel reluctant to give up the age-old concept of the divine intercession, as it has been constantly indoctrinated in his various beliefs and pantheologies and which he has acquired over his period of evolution. The idea of divine intercession represents to most people a very convenient relief and, as such, an escape mechanism from the various otherwise insoluble differences in man's daily life. He has been subconsciously, or consciously, believing that no matter how tough the going was, should things pile up against him, the divine intercession, the belief that Christ could save him, would immediately dissolve everything in that forthcoming judgment day. Moreover, the context of the previous portion of this chapter is also quite complex in nature, for it immediately presents the problem to the reader that he now has to assume the position of the guiding power in his own destiny. He must also assume the moral responsibility for all acts of consciousness, and this, too, could cause a revolt in the reader's mind. He may then refer to one or more incidents in his own daily life where he believes spiritual healing has been instigated, or he may even refer to the classical example of the great avatar, Jesus of Nazareth, who healed so many people. For these reasons, therefore, we shall take this classical lifetime of Jesus as a typical example, as it is portrayed in the so-called Art of Divine Healing, as the life of this man is quite well known to some 800 million people who call themselves Christians. Contrary to general opinion, Jesus did not heal or help to heal everyone or all with whom he came in contact, who were in need of healing or of some corrective measure. For everyone who received results, there were hundreds who went away in dire straits and circumstances and were not helped in any way, at least not at that time, by any action which they wished might have taken place. The reasons for this situation are quite obvious when properly understood. As has been previously postulated, healing can take place in the physical or material worlds only as a result of certain cyclic junctions and which, when this takes place, automatically create within the person the desired healing results. Such conditions always are, and always have been, an automatic function within the mind and body of every individual. The very fact that life is sustained from the automation of this same principle is quite easily explained and fully justified in everyday life. However, to understand fully, it is most necessary that the student learn of certain fundamental principles which can be referred to as creative and recreative transmissions which are in constant force and activation in the infinite cosmos around him. This is all part of the infinite mind to which most people refer as God. To the scientist and those who understand the scientific principles underlying the various transmissions of life and also in such fields which are referred to as atomic structures, these concepts and principles will be more easily understood. However, it is most necessary in all cases, before healing or readjustment in life can take place, that certain fundamental values in these creative principles be at least somewhat understood. Referring again to the previous context, it was resolved in common physical science that all substance, visible or invisible, is energy. This also includes those seemingly so-called particles of matter, termed atoms, which are actually energy solar systems. In the various interdimensional linkages, it is not possible for any third-dimensional transmission of life, as it is seen about us, to take place without immediate and connecting reactions with an infinite number of dimensions from which the very source of life and power stems. It is impossible to do one of the simpler acts of daily life without having implications which reach hundreds of thousands of years, in the term or sense of time, both into the past and into the future, so far as the relationship of energy and its transmission is concerned. Therefore, we must consider the mechanics of these various transmissions which we call the appearances of life about us. First, it can always be pictured and assumed, in the dynamics of these transmissions, that all things travel as a sine wave or a combination of such wave frequencies and sine waves always vibrate, or from the polarities as are so contained from positive to negative in these sine wave formations, they are carrying a certain consciousness within them. These various appearances from positive to negative and the relationship of this consciousness takes place at a predetermined rate of time or frequency. To Einstein and such savants, the transference of energy from the third dimensional planes, or the material world, into other nearby planes such as the fourth or fifth dimension, where it seems time actually merges and becomes a quality or a quantity of the transmission of energy, has always posed a great mystery. To the student, this principle is much more easily understood than are these various contexts or the theses to such theorems as are contained in the postulations by Einstein. We simply envision the fourth dimension as such a world or a dimension in which the transmission of life always takes place as cyclic motion within whatever energy wave forms we are so concerned, or in other words, simply as a circle. Many years ago, Einstein was quoted as saying that if you drew a line far enough and straight enough, it would meet itself coming around at the other end. This is, in a sense, his fourth dimensional concept and, to some degree, fully proves what we are about to discuss. In other words, so far as other worlds and dimensions are concerned, any particular idea, form, or consciousness, as it is related to the infinite mind, is complete in itself, and therefore can be considered cyclic in motion. It is the vast conjunctive relationships of an infinite number of these different types and forms of consciousness which go to make up the matrix of the infinite cosmos that we call the cosmogony about us. It is also the various differences and alliances with these cyclic patterns as they are concerned with the sinusoidal wave forms of which they are composed which go to make up the great vortical patterns, patterns which make up suns and solar systems. They also make up the very atoms of our physical bodies. We have fully established the relationship in which all things can be resolved into energy, and conduct themselves according to certain principles which, for the sake of introspection, can be called laws. The word law is referred to loosely as merely a convenient or a descriptive word, For in all cases principle, as it is concerned with the infinite mind, is a much better form of terminology. The various wave-form transmissions, as they are concerned in the oscillating processes both finitely and infinitely, always function, as it has been stated, according to these well-known laws. In other words, our first law is concerned with what is commonly referred to as harmonic relationship. When we find that two different waveforms strike each other or that they intermingle, there is a third set of waveforms generated which are called harmonic structures or harmonic waveforms. This third set of waveform patterns always carry, to some degree, the original idiom or consciousness of the primary elements which instigated the harmonic formation. Therefore, as such regenerative processes are subjective to the numerous different conditions and alliances with similar waveforms incompatible rates of frequency with which they might become interrelated, this presents a rather complex problem which could become quite confusing. It must be remembered that, conversely, the same law applies to keep all things in their proper dimension and their proper relationship without this so-called confusion, for diametrically opposed to the law of harmonic principle and as a balancing agent is the law of frequency relationship which determines that, according to the rate of vibration, any energy wave is either in compatible relationship with another wave or it is diametrically opposed or opposite to it, and under no condition can it merge with this other waveform until it has adjusted its rate of frequency. This principle then, after it has been thoroughly established in the reader's mind, leads us to another principle which is directly concerned with such frequency affiliations, and is of particular value when we wish to understand more thoroughly the action of the solid or atomic world about us. This is the principle which modern science calls catalysis, or the catalytic action of a third or neutral element in conjunction with two or more other elements which, up to that time, have not been synonymous or compatible in nature. Catalytic action means that we must now transfer the perspective of our analysis to the very atom itself and realize that all atoms, large and small, either as they have been compounded in molecules or exist in a singular fashion, always have one common property, that is, they have a field of force. As they are electrically constituted from various positive and negative charges revolving around a common nucleus or core, they are also radiating into the space about them, various wave forms of energy which are the direct result of these different regenerations within the atom itself. Some atoms, such as radium, actually shoot or fire off tiny bullets of pure energy from the very heart of the atom itself, in a common process of degeneration. The field of force around each atom, whether it is large or small, is governed directly by the same laws of harmonic relationship or frequency vibration as are those dynamically inclined, such as the free-moving interchange or interplay of energy formations within the range of the more commonly accepted forms of energy which we may see about us. If we take common ordinary table salt, we shall find a classical example of what is termed catalytic action, for table salt involves the combination of two elements which, under normal conditions, are entirely foreign to each other's nature and could not in any other way be so combined. These two common elements are the deadly gas chlorine and the common inert substance known as sodium. By catalytic action in nature's great laboratories, due to several compelling agents of force such as are contained in sunlight and other catalytic agents, the gas and sodium come in contact with one another and at proper conjunctions the two atoms are merged in a common union with a simple free electron in their orbit of transmission, thus becoming the inert substance known as salt. Thereby, these two atoms are constantly so interlocked with this electronic constituent that they have completely neutralized their original and determining qualities as atoms in their own particular scale of atomic weights. Either chlorine or sodium would be a poison in the human system and could cause distress or death, but merged as salt, become instead, one of the agents used by the body to maintain a certain alkaline balance which is so necessary in the process of osmosis in the lymphatic system. This same action takes place when an individual swallows an aspirin tablet. The tiny atoms as they are combined in molecules, when reaching certain different portions of the lower brain structures, which are in control of such centers called the pain centers, immediately neutralize with their field of force the impulses of energy which are called pain. Thus they have that analgesic action which is sought by those who are suffering from some simple form of pain, such as a headache. The catalytic action or the combining or the recombining of various fields of force, as they are so visualized in various atomic or molecular structures, can also be carried on up into the infinite cosmogony. Then it will be found that the same relationship exists, not only in planetary systems, but also in such structures which the astronomer calls universes or galaxies. The same particular affiliations and transmissions of energy structures as are contained in the atom exist, in a pure sense, in a much more expanded and larger ratio of transmission. Chapter 2. Now we have begun to understand that even in the simplest and most common acts of everyday life, there are always some very scientific principles involved which make these acts possible and that these various transmissions have, as has been suggested, very far-reaching and infinite effects. They relate not only to the immediate appearance as they are concerned with the individual but in a sense they also can affect, either inversely or adversely, certain dimensional transmissions which may be hundreds of thousands of years in the past or in the future. It is in these common transmissions of everyday life, in the affiliation of frequency relationships and such common abstractions as resolve themselves into the individual's constructive evolutionary process which he calls life, which have been the determining elements in what he calls sin or evil, and good. We can consider that any act which is performed by the individual is, first and primarily, merely the transmission or the release of a certain amount of energy. The energy used by the farmer to hold his plowshare in the furrow can be the same energy which the same man could use with a sword to strike off an adversary's head. It is in the transmission of these various energy formations with which the average individual is concerned in his evolutionary process from life to life, it is he, himself, who determines which is or which is not constructive in his evolutionary pattern. Thus it is, sooner or later, every individual reaches that certain particular threshold within his own consciousness when he becomes tremendously conscious of the difference between good and evil. When he is thus concerned personally with various transmissions of an evil nature in his past lives, he may say to himself that he has been destructively inclined. This, then, will always cause the individual a great sense of guilt, even though in his material life he cannot explain its origin to anyone, for it is a complex structure of various energy wave forms which are oscillating in his psychic body which have, at that particular moment, created for him a great subconscious sense of guilt. Whether or not he was directly responsible for these different energy wave forms, as they are impinged in the psychic body in his transmission of life in the past, is no justifiable excuse but merely means he lived his life in the common idiom of that particular moment, and in that process the energy wave forms entered into the structural matrix of the psychic self. He will, therefore, under these common conditions have a great urgency, a feeling from within himself that he must by some means cancel out or relieve the psychic pressure of this great guilt mechanism. As is posed in the previous context, this feeling comes from and is primarily instigated by the development of his other polarity, the superconsciousness, for in these opposites of relationships, the individual is immediately struck with these great differences. The fact is, primarily, that the individual lives most of the time in the spiritual worlds anyway, where he can thus see these diametrically opposed differences. It can also be resolved that the transmissions of life are always instigated from the spiritual side of man's nature and not in some supposedly immediate superficial reactionary combination of conditions which might arise on the surface of his daily life. Any act of any individual in his continuance of daily life is also the continued and sustained oscillation which was previously incurred by the individual in other places, and under the laws of harmonic relationships. He is constantly instigating and inflicting within his psychic structures new and other differences in these psychic structures of energy waveforms which can be considered harmonic in nature to the originating waveforms. Therefore in that particular position of life between Earth lives, the person is more conscious of the higher, or the superconscious presence in the various affiliations with the more constructive or progressive side of evolution. He wishes then to cancel out these things so that in the particular spiritual worlds, in moments of transcendency, he makes certain connections or affiliations, or he may actually undergo specific scholastic teachings which will show him how these various waveforms can be cancelled out in order that he may be reinstated in a healthier position in his daily life. We can take any particular person who has reached this threshold and find him traveling in the spiritual worlds, and he will, under these conditions, affiliate himself with such teaching schools or agencies. Should he find some avatar, such as Jesus, teaching a large group of people and showing them how the numerous and varied energy waveforms can be changed or transmuted in their psychic bodies, he will naturally have a great and compelling desire to do so. However, as part of this teaching curriculum, it is most necessarily imposed in the student's mind that the corrective processes must take place in the same dimensions of relationship in which they were formerly incurred. This is so simply because of frequency relationships, for the person in question must now regenerate a completely new set of waveforms and cyclic patterns. This new set of regenerative waveforms, while compatible as harmonic structures with the original set which was negative in nature, is now of a positive nature. Thus, in combining with the original negative waveforms which incurred the indisposition or sin, they will, in this combining process, neutralize, just as in the case of common table salt, the negative or repercussive elements in these various waveforms. This, then, is the principle behind all spiritual healing. As has been previously postulated, it must and always does come from the inner or spiritual side of man's nature. Referring again to Jesus, the avatar, and to those whom he contacted and who were so-called miraculously healed from various indispositions, this was the recombining of these different scientific principles, as previously explained. Those who were healed recognized in Jesus, the principle or guiding force or avatar, who had formerly contacted them in the spiritual world and had taught them the principles of correction of the various negative energy waveforms which were in existence in their psychic bodies, whether they were lepers or were blind or were otherwise deformed mentally or physically, made no difference. In the true light of introspection as they were posed in that spiritual world, and looking into their psychic bodies from the higher self, these people saw the malformed waveform structures residing in their psychic bodies, but, at that time, they had no way or means to dissolve or cancel them, other than to re-establish themselves in an oscillating fashion on the common plane of earth life where they formerly incurred the negative indispositions. When Jesus came by the road where they were thus waiting for him, through frequency vibration, a certain rapport was again established with the life between earth lives where they had seen these energy waveforms and had explained to them the principles for cancellation. Referring to these various mental projections, which come under the heading of psychokinesis and which were an aiding or a catalytic agent or force in the process, then recombining as harmonic constituents the energy waveforms so evolved in this process, from the higher self of Jesus, these negative waveforms in the psychic body, as they related to atomic structures, were thus cancelled out and completely reconstituted as positive reciprocating elements which could be considered normal in their relationship to the human body. The very atoms, as structural elements in molecular formations and cell formations in the human body, were thus connected or changed instantaneously. The thought must be held in the mind of the reader that every atom is a sustained or surface appearance of a cyclic pattern as it resolves in that dimension of the psychic body, and this same cyclic relationship also relates to every other atom in the infinite universe. These same principles also hold true in any and all sundry superficial cases of healing such as are incurred in a modern everyday world, whether they take place in the hospitals, in the homes, or under any other condition which can be envisioned by the reader. The same principles which have been explained must always be in proper conjunction and relationship before healing of any sort can take place. It makes little difference whether the person who is ill or so concerned with healing visualizes this catalytic agent as Jesus the Avatar, or whether he finds this catalytic and compelling agent in the face of his doctor, or that he finds it in the face of his priest, or perhaps he could even find it by swallowing a simple aspirin tablet or even by drinking a glass of water.